Welcome to ACC Nation. We continue our Voices of Football previews with the play-by-play voices of Duke and Virginia Tech. Coming up in a few moments, David Shumate talks about what to expect from Blue Devils football. And then in the second interview, John Lazor gives us an insider's look at the Hokies. A way too early preseason top 25 is out for college lacrosse, and the ACC has scored five spots in the poll. Last year's national champs, Virginia, tabbed at number two. Who else from the ACC gets into the top 25? Duke, Notre Dame, Syracuse, and North Carolina. All five are ranked in the top 15. Which ACC football teams are getting a nod for best unis this season? One, Pitt, going to a bright blue and yellow. And two, Syracuse, who ditches the blue helmet but have plenty in their combos. ACC Nation Radio is now available 365 days a year, 24/7. Go to our website, accnation.net, click on the link and begin looking for us on your favorite streaming sites. You'll hear our Voices of Football previews with Don Munson of Clemson, Paul Rogers of Louisville, Gary Hahn of NC State, Dave Kane of Virginia, plus a lot more to come. Now, a look at what David Cutcliffe has brought to Duke football and what to expect this season as we continue the Voices of Football preview series with David Shumate, the voice of the Duke Blue Devils. One of the more intriguing spokes of the Duke football wheel is head coach David Cutcliffe. Outside of local media coverage, he comes across as calm, cool, and in control. He's picked up the moniker, the quarterback whisperer. Tell us, who is David Cutcliffe and what did he bring to Duke football?
Everything. I mean, too fine of a point on it, but I mean, he's essentially rebuilt the program here at Duke, a program that had a ton of success maybe two generations ago in the 50s and 60s, and one that largely struggled for better part of 50 years outside of a small stretch for Steve Spurrier was at Duke in the 80s. David Cutcliffe took a program that was essentially, you know, not taken seriously in the ACC. And he has turned it into a program that is consistently in contention in the Coastal and consistently going bowling at this point, which a lot of people, I think, you know, when he arrived on campus, as he goes into, you know, his second decade here at Duke, a lot of people didn't think was possible. And I think that tells you a lot about a man who, for me, is really a visionary in this sport, certainly with the X's and O's and what he can do in scheming things out offensively and what he's done over the course of his career, but more so what he can see in terms of what a program needs, facilities, culture, personnel, coaches, everything from the top down. It's just very, very unique to see someone that has the football smarts, but also the people smarts to build a program. And I think that's what puts him amongst the very top end of when you look at college football coaches across the country. And I think when you talk to guys like Dabo Swinney or Nick Saban, they'd echo those sentiments.
Let's dissect the offense. The good news, six linemen return, all juniors. Without a solid line, quarterbacks get rushed. Running backs are stymied. Points don't materialize. Down in the trenches, who are the guys making it happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one part of the scheme that everyone is kind of excited for going into this upcoming season. You have some stability along the offensive line when you look at guys like, you know, Jack Wallaball, the transfer from Ohio State, that'll be entering his second year starting at center. You got some stability on the right side of the line with Arcavius Chambers and Robert Kraling, Julian Santos, who will be, you know, going into his fourth year, essentially having playing time, third year in a starting role, and getting a guy like Jalen Miller back at that left tackle position out of injury last year. Casey Holman, who's got some experience. There is depth also along that offensive line. You know, guys like Pisato are going to get some playing time. So that is an area that's going to be a strength for Duke, I think, going into the season, particularly when you look at some of the guys that they've got behind them. I know we'll probably talk about Quentin Harris, who's going to be the new starting quarterback with Daniel Jones going in the first round last year. But also Duke is really, really deep with some talented running backs this season. And the two guys at the top of that pile, Deion Jackson and Britton Brown, I think are poised, you know, for a breakout season. You know, David Cutcliffe hasn't had a 1,000-yard rusher since he's been here at Duke. I think there's a potential this year you could have two.
All right, we'll get into those guys here in just a moment. Well, let's start out with a quarterback. So, as you mentioned, off to the NFL, Daniel Jones goes to the New York Giants. In steps what I would call a seasoned player in senior Quentin Harris. Now, when Harris filled in for Jones, there were certainly flashes of great play. He's more of a threat as a runner as well. Tell us what Harris brings to this offense.
Well, I think, as you said, season, I think he brings experience. A lot of people think, it's just natural to think when you have a new starting quarterback, the offense might take a step back. And I just don't buy that with this particular kid because he has been around the program for so long. He is a senior, and he's had seen considerable playing time. Even when Jones was healthy in the starter, he a lot of times would do a ton of the goal line packages. But he also was able to step in last year when Daniel Jones had a collarbone injury, start on the road against Baylor and lead Duke to a dominating one on the road, won another game as a starter against NC Central, came into that game against Northwestern where Daniel Jones got hurt and finished out the win. This is a really, really solid player that as much as anything, probably his greatest attribute is his leadership skills. He has got the respect of the team. That's evident to me when you watch them practice, when you watch them around the facility. He's incredibly bright. And I think a lot of people have looked at what he's done to this point and say, okay, he's a running quarterback because that's a lot of what he's done around the goal line. But this is a guy who throws one of the better deep balls that I've seen and a tremendous passer down the field, incredibly accurate. So I think he's going to surprise a few people with the wrinkles that he brings to the table. Daniel Jones, don't get me wrong, was an incredible talent, but I don't think it's as big of a step backward as some people might be thinking.
Okay. At running back, you mentioned Jackson, Brown, Hubbard, return. Let me know if I missed someone there. What are their strengths?
Yeah, Mateo Durant as well got some touches last year. So you essentially got, you know, four different guys who can go in there and get you multiple carries. But, you know, you look at Deion Jackson. This was a guy last year that came out and was essentially slated to be the backup to Britton Brown, who had to deal with some injuries. And then Deion Jackson was thrust into a leading role and just wrapped his arms around it, embraced it, rushed for nearly 900 yards, had seven touchdowns. He is a guy that is powerful, but with explosive speed. And I think nothing was more evident of that than what you saw him do against Miami when Duke went on the road. On the first play from scrimmage, ran away from the Miami secondary on a 75-yard touchdown run. That's just not something you see against Miami, is guys running away from them. His speed is incredible, but also his power to fight through contact if he needs to. And then you've got Britton Brown, who to me is a very elusive running back, a guy who can find his way when there isn't really much space to be had. So an interesting combo with those two, both with plenty of speed, but the way they work their way through the line and through the hole is a little bit different.
You touched on the long ball from Harris. There was a bit of a turnover in wide receivers, but nonetheless, there's Bobo, Young, Johnson, Bracy, Garner, plus tight end Gray to keep an eye on. Has Harris been able to create a connection with these guys in the offseason? And do you feel like that's going to carry over and make it a threat this fall?
I think so, and in some respects, because last year he was taking the second team reps quite a bit. He built the connection with a lot of these guys last year. As they were working through things with practice, he's very familiar with this receiving core. And you talk about Jake Bobo, who is the leading returner in terms of catches with 10, and that probably is going to make a lot of people kind of wide-eyed about the lack of returning wideouts for Duke. But he's got some height that I think Duke has kind of been longing for at the wide receiver position at 6'4". And that's really kind of a theme when you look at these young guys. They're tall, they're quick, and it feels like that's kind of the way the receiver game is going. And you have a guy like Aaron Young to kind of buoy that from an experience standpoint that had really a breakout performance in the season opener for Duke last year against Army. And then, unfortunately, in practice, suffered a hamstring injury and kind of battled that the entirety of the season. I think he's ready to come out and prove something to folks. So, you do have some guys that maybe aren't as familiar to people across the country and within the fan base. So some guys with some things to prove, including a Scott Bracy, who was, you know, very highly touted recruit that hasn't broken out yet. So you got some guys that I think are ready to kind of show what they can do. And you touched on him as well, some stability at the tight end position, in Noah Gray, 6'4", 240. He's gotten a lot of playing time his last couple of seasons, had 20 catches a year ago. And the coaches rave about him as someone who's maybe got some of the best hands on the team in terms of catching passes, can go out like a wideout. So a lot of different weapons for Quentin Harris to go to. Maybe not as familiar as a T.J. Ramming, who's a leading receiver from a year ago. But these guys have some talent. But you're right, to some extent, they do have something to prove.
Let's switch over to defense. When we talk David Cutcliffe, we always think about, well, offense. When he arrived, the S&P ratings of the Duke defense went from 104 in 2012 to 20th in 2017. It slipped a little bit last year, still in the top 50. There was a change in coaching staff and a roster of younger players. From all that I can tell, this defensive line is really solid. The biggest concern, pass rush. Some names, McSwain, Tangelo, Fry. Fill in the rest for us for the defensive line.
Yeah, and the ends you certainly want to look at, and Drew Jordan and Victor Bumukeji, two of the more talented defensive ends. And these are guys that are, I think, will come into their own in their junior season. They kind of burst onto the scene in their freshman year 2 years ago. And then last year, teams kind of changed things and game plan for them, and they had to work through that. Also had to deal with some nagging injuries. And you talk about the defense last year taking a little bit of a step back. Injuries were just brutal for the Duke defense a year ago, whether it is, you know, Mark Gilbert, who dislocates a hip against Northwestern when he's slated to potentially be a first-team All-American, a corner. You have a guy like Dylan Singleton who goes down with an injury in the secondary. Both linebackers for Duke had to deal with injuries, Joe Giles Harris and Ben Humphreys, and they were kind of the core of the defense. And then up front, what we're currently talking about, Edgar Cerenord, who was kind of the heart and soul of this defensive line and one of the leaders, went down with an injury a couple of different occasions and finally had to shut it down for the season after an injury against Georgia Tech, was granted another year of eligibility, so he'll be back. A lot of familiar faces on that defensive line, an area that Duke feels is going to be a huge strength for them going into the season. Injuries were the main thing last year on defense, and a defense that towards the end of the year did give up a ton of yards on the ground. There's no question about that. But I think if you dig a little deeper, I don't really know if that's what this defense was about so much as the injuries just finally took their toll.
Goddard, Joe Giles Harris, Ben Humphreys, as you mentioned, at linebacker, Brandon Feimster at corner. Also, Mark Gilbert, that you mentioned, an injury scratch last year, returns to the fold. Plenty of names on the roster that should make it interesting. Waters, Johnson, Young, the aforementioned Gilbert, Carter, Blackwell. Give us your thoughts on what will be awaiting an offensive opponent if they get past the line.
Yeah, no, I think that could potentially be the real strength of this team. And I'm talking about the secondary. And with Gilbert being back and a guy like Singleton and a guy like Michael Carter II, who got some time at corner a year ago and is now going to move inside and play safety, this is, you know, it's one of those things. Last year, Duke had to deal with a lot of injuries. And because of that, a lot of guys got playing time that they probably wouldn't have gotten. And I think the hope in the defensive room and the belief in the defensive room is that that's going to pay dividends this year. These guys are going to be seeing the field, but they're experienced guys, even though they're somewhat young. And there's a ton of depth back there. You did touch on the linebacking core. Kobe Kwanza and Brandon Hill right now are slated to be the two starters at linebacker. Duke plays a base nickel set defensively, so they play with two linebackers and four linemen up front. But those are the two guys that I think Duke feels really good about, but that's going to be the area I would imagine most people are going to point to and say that's going to be the key. How do Kobe Kwanza and Brandon Hill fill the shoes that were left by Joe Giles Harris and Ben Humphreys, who were Duke's linebacking core in the heart of this defense for the last three seasons? And that is a fair question for people to ask, and I think Kwanza and Hill are very excited about showing what they can do, having gotten some playing time a year ago, having gotten some playing time the last several years, but now it's their defense, so to speak, and they've got great complementary pieces around them. We've talked about the strength of that defensive line, and a secondary, for those that don't see Duke week in and week out, that likes to play very aggressively on the outside and gives the linebackers a chance to make some key plays in the running game. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because Duke is not a team that likes to play bend but don't break. They want to get after you every now and then. You know, you'll give up a play, a big play playing that way, but it's a defense that likes to make explosive plays and cause a lot of havoc. That's kind of a term they use, talking about havoc plays, you know, tackles for loss and things like that. That's something they feel like is a huge strength of their defense and something that maybe got away from them later in the year last year because of all the injuries.
Let's take a look now at special teams. Piecemeal, this looks pretty solid. Driggers on kickoffs, Jackson returning. Here's the question. Who's stepping in to put the ball through the uprights for extra points and field goals?
Well, you got options, right? That's one thing Duke is not short on going into it. And I think David Cutcliffe, it'll be interesting what he says as we get a little bit closer to kickoff. If history is any indicator, he's going to let it be a competition. You got guys like Austin Parker, who was the kicker 2 years ago, A.J. Reed, who handled the place-kicking duties 3 years ago, Charlie Hamm, who's a new recruit for Duke, a freshman, who might also get a chance to have a look to see what he can do on that front. So I think it's going to be something that's going to play itself out over the course of the next 5 weeks. But that is definitely an area that's going to be interesting to watch as it plays out over the next few weeks as they try to settle on who is going to be their place kicker, because I do think it's a bit of an open competition going into the fall.
So when we look at the schedule, we heard a collective gasp from broad and wide, opening with Alabama. Now, there's also an amazing run through the ACC schedule, beginning 3 weeks later with the likes of Virginia Tech, then Pitt, Virginia, Notre Dame comes up, Syracuse, and then finishing off with Miami. That's challenging, to say the least. Your thought on some of these matchups?
Well, I mean, Duke tried really hard to get Oklahoma on the schedule, so over the course of a year they could play the entire, you know, quartet that played in the college football playoff, having played Clemson last November, and then having Alabama and Notre Dame coming up this season. But I guess you can only take on so much. Yeah, it is difficult. I think that's the easiest way to put that. But I think it also speaks to the fact that David Cutcliffe has built a very solid program here at Duke, and one that, you know, isn't wide-eyed going into those contests. I bring up the Clemson game from last November to kind of illustrate that point. This was a Duke team that was really ravaged by injuries. And a lot of people may not realize this, but a Duke team that at the end of the opening quarter in Death Valley had a 6-0 lead on Clemson. So a team that went toe-to-toe with a team that eventually went on to win the national championship and a dominating win over Alabama. So this isn't a squad that's going to be intimidated or all that concerned about what Alabama does. There will be a certainly a level of respect there for what Nick Saban and that program has built. But I think it's an opportunity. These guys are excited to have an opportunity to play against a team like that. And they know every year that the ACC Coastal is going to be a challenge and a grind and a great division. And they're ready for that. And I do think it's telling that, you know, when people look at Duke now, they look at their schedule and say, okay, how do you match up with this opponent? This is going to be challenging. This is going to be an interesting game. Where maybe 15 years ago, people would say it's impossible, for lack of a better term. And I think that speaks to how far this program has come, that people are looking at this team and this schedule now and saying, you know, what David Cutcliffe has built, getting to 7, 8, 9, 10 wins consistently, you know, this year, how does that play out with such a difficult schedule? There aren't many people out there saying, there's just no chance.
Well, that will wrap up our time with David Shumate, the voice of the Duke Blue Devils. Thank you, David, for joining us and sharing your thoughts on Duke football.
Appreciate it. Let's get the kickoff.
This will become a familiar theme beginning in August as the new ACC network on ESPN debuts. During ACC Media Days, three football announcing teams were announced. On the first, Wes Durham, Roddy Jones, and Eric Wood. The second, Dave O'Brien, Tim Hasselbeck, and Katie George. Chris Cotter, Mark Herzlich, and Kelsey Riggs rounds out the teams. Plus, Jack Collingsworth and John Beeson take on a new program called The Huddle. And Kelsey Riggs, Jordan Cornette, and Dalen Cuff on All ACC. Lots to look forward to. In case you missed out on some of the chatter coming out of ACC Media Days, here are a few sound bites from the coaches. First up, Clemson's Dabo Swinney on what wins championships.
You know, people talk about defense wins championships. I always laugh at that. Defense don't win championships. teams win championships.
Wake Forest's Dave Clawson talks about how tempo plays into the success of the Deacs offense.
So tempo is very important in terms of what we do, but it's the ability to change tempo and not always play at the same pace that I think is most difficult to defend.
Syracuse's Dino Babers on playing in the ACC Atlantic and how that applies to teams outside the division.
If you're in the ACC and you're in the ACC Atlantic, your big brother is as big as anybody on the street. Okay, if you can handle him, you're going to be able to have an opportunity with anybody else.
And finally, with the brouhaha and kerfuffle stirred up by players dismissing Clemson, these words of advice from Alabama coach Nick Saban, spoken immediately after losing the national championship 44-16.
You have to learn how to lose as well as how you win.
What challenges lay ahead for Justin Fuente and Bud Foster in Blacksburg? We continue the Voices of Football preview series with John Lazor, the voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies. The churn that naturally occurs with a new coach who changes the program and fills it with his own recruits looks like it's giving way to stability for Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. The word that pops up frequently is continuity. So, John, you started at the end of the Beamer era and have had front row seats to the changes. Share your observations.
Yeah, I think you absolutely hit it on the head with what you said there in terms of continuity and also getting it to a place where he's comfortable with it in terms of the roster makeup. When Coach Beamer retired back in 2015, there was a ton of talent still on this football team. You're looking at the outstanding trio of receivers that Justin Fuente inherited, the Edmonds brothers on the defensive side of the ball, and he can go on. And obviously he brought in Gerard Evans and was able to have immediate success and win the Coastal Division in 2016 and then carried some of that defensively into 2017. But to simplify it, you got to a point where the guys that were remaining weren't necessarily guys that had bought in totality to what he was trying to do, the way he was attempting to structure practice and the two deep and his program essentially. And you got to that blend where it was guys that he had brought here or his staff had brought here mixing with those guys. And I think you saw a little bit of that combust last year. And you got to the point where some of those guys just needed to go for whatever reason may be the case. And now as you enter this as fourth season, I really feel like you've gotten to that place, to use your word again, of continuity, to use some of the players' words, fun. They're having fun around each other again. It seems like they really enjoy being members of this football program. And at that point, you hope that then the talent comes to the forefront. And I think that's why everyone's optimistic heading into this season.
What do you see as Fuente's biggest challenge moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's continuing to build that depth. You know, I thought when he came in, he wasn't shy about saying that it wasn't there offensively. You know, I mentioned the big three that you had. I'm talking about Isaiah Ford, Cam Phillips, and Bucky Hodges. But this is a system that needs to get to 9, 10, 11, 12 deep at wide receiver. And I think that you've gotten to that point. I think you'll see some of that with the receiving positions and tight end spots. But you also need to get there on the lines. And I don't think this is a roster that is where it wants to be on the defensive side of the ball, particularly up front on the defensive line. And that may be an area where this team is challenged, particularly if, like last year, you have an early season injury or two. And I don't think that this is a team that can compete at the top level and withstand some of those things defensively. So it continues to be a work in progress. I think every coach in America outside of maybe Dabo and Nick Saban would tell you that they're not where they want to be from a depth perspective. So that's not a unique challenge to Blacksburg. But at the same time, I think that is the biggest one that faces Justin Fuente and company, despite the fact that they've recruited very well since they've been here.
You brought up defense, so let's just head in that direction. One of the trademarks of the Hokies has been Bud Foster's blue-collar lunch pail defense. The difference between last season and this year is a story unto itself. Last year, lots of freshmen, sophomores. It was literally trial by fire. So let's start with the defensive line, and we'll look at some of these JUCO transfers. And where is the stability coming from for the defensive line this year?
Yeah, that's the biggest question mark. And you're right, it has been a hallmark around here for decades under Bud and Charlie Wiles up front. And this year you lose Ricky Walker, who was a player that was nicknamed the Bell Cow by Justin Fuente and was unquestionably the leader up front. So that's a big loss. And
you know, everyone's citing the fact that unlike last year when you had two, at best, three starters back defensively when it all shook out, this year, depending on how you're counting them up, you've got 9, 10, or 11, even in some cases at certain points of last season. But the big one that you don't have is Ricky Walker. So Jared Hewitt takes over as the leader of that defensive tackle unit and in the middle of that defensive line. You mentioned the transfers to Sean Crawford. He's going to play and play a lot. He looked good in the spring coming over from the junior college ranks. Jaden Cunningham, we haven't gotten as much of a look at him just yet before fall camp opens, but I think they figure that he's going to factor in. And like last year, you're going to play some young guys. You're going to play some freshmen and redshirt freshmen in the middle and hope that they can mature quickly and more quick than maybe they intended to when they got here. I think you feel a little bit better about what you have on the outside in the defensive line. Tywan Garbutt, I felt like, was on the verge of breaking out last year. Nathan Proctor got dinged up at the end of the year, but I think he's going to contribute. Emmanuel Belmar was a guy that converted from tight end. So you've got options on the defensive end spots, but the heart and soul of this defense this year, without question, is going to be its linebackers and its safeties. You really saw a couple of blossoming stars last year in Rayshard Ashby and Dax Hollifield, and then Divine Diablo. He's the key to the whole thing at the free safety spot. He got hurt again last year. He didn't play in Old Dominion, and you saw what the devastating effect of that was.
Well, since you brought up linebackers, cornerbacks, and safeties, let's go into a little more detail here. So, and you do have some exciting players: Ashby, Hollifield, Farley, Watts, Floyd, Ladler. What can we expect out of this secondary with that seasoning that they bring in from last season?
Well, they're going to be greatly improved. You know, again, you're looking at Rayshard Ashby, who's technically a junior because he spent his freshman year on special teams, but took over for Andrew Motuopuaka in the middle last year, wound up being all ACC honorable mention and had 105 tackles. You know, honestly, you probably didn't want his tackle number to be that high because you wouldn't have liked him to have to chase down so many plays, but he did. He was capable. Dax Hollifield last year, Coach Fuente called him an unguided missile. When he was assessing his performance, he said the effort and the ability is there. He just doesn't necessarily know which direction he's going as a true freshman. And I think that could be said of a lot of players ascending to this level. But with that said, and Dylan Rivers was your starter at the backer position last year before he went down with an injury, and Dax kind of seized that spot from him. So you feel good about your top two lines in the linebacking core, particularly the top two. I think they're up there in terms of being one of the better linebacking units. You know, they're not Miami in terms of experience at this point, but certainly I think, again, will be the anchor of this defense. Reggie Floyd is your most seasoned returning player. And at that Rober spot, you know, you expect him to be the leader of this defense. But Divine Diablo is probably your biggest at this point NFL prospect. You know, he looks the part, he plays the part. Unfortunately, he's just had a series of minor injuries, and his absence has shifted everybody. You know, it takes a player out of the alley that shouldn't be there. It didn't allow the safeties to provide the corners who needed the help last year while Caleb Farley was switching sides of the ball from offense to defense and also playing as a freshman, the help that they could get. And Bud wasn't able to cycle back guys that way. So, you know, as we sit here in talking season and everything's a perfect world, you know, those guys will help protect those corners who you'd also expect to have taken a step forward. And then, of course, we're also hoping that Jeremy Webb, coming off back-to-back years in which he was out for the year with an Achilles injury, can finally get on the field and play. People forget about him. He was the number one junior college cornerback available a couple of years ago that the Hokies were able to recruit and bring here. And again, he's a bigger, more physical, more prototypical Bud Foster corner that, again, if the timetable holds, should be available for you in Boston.
Let's look at special teams for a moment. We've got a couple of kickers, Bradburn Johnson, they're back. Return man Wheatley is back. But what are some of the changes that we may see there on special teams this season?
Yeah, you lost your kickoff specialist, Jordan Stout. He decided to put his name in the transfer portal and wound up at Penn State ultimately. And he was a weapon. You know, his touchback percentage at times was leading the country last year. You could pretty much count, unless you were intentionally going to keep it in play on a shorter kick, that he was going to be able to bang it through the end zone. So it took a lot of pressure off your kick contain coverage unit. But we'll see what the options are. They've brought in a couple of guys that will compete in fall camp for that role. You mentioned Brian Johnson. You know, he probably is atop the heap in terms of place kickers at the moment. You've, again, brought in another option or two to compete because, quite frankly, his success rate wasn't where he needed it to be last year. And you know, he followed the all-time leading scorer here at Tech and Joey Sly, so you felt pretty good about that spot. for a number of years, and it's been fairly inconsistent. You mentioned Austin Bradburn. You feel great about him. He's been one of the top punters in the country since he's gotten here from Australia. This will be his junior season. He's kind of the leader of that special teams group. Your snapper's back and Oscar Shadley, so you don't have too many concerns there. The return game since the departure of Greg Stroman a couple of years ago, to use Coach Fuente's word, has been a mess. They just haven't been able to find anybody at either of those spots, and it continues to be an open tryout. You know, you have guys that are raising their hand and volunteering on a daily basis and get opportunities, and it just hasn't translated to success in games. Tarius Wheatley, whom you mentioned, you know, has flashed a couple of times in the beginning of the year last year in that kick returner spot, but unfortunately got banged up with a shoulder injury, and then we never really saw much from Tarius after that. I'm sure he'll get a look at the outset of the year. Caleb Farley was used in that role. It's a kid that runs 24 miles per hour, so he certainly has the speed to do it. And again, you need to identify some of those guys, because the third phase needs to be a phase that, like this program did for decades under Coach Beamer, you win in.
Overall, there's a great deal of potential rising on offense. The one spot that's probably going to raise an eyebrow is the offensive line, which is loaded with sophomores. However, that doesn't always tell the entire story. Who should we be keeping an eye on here?
Yeah, the offensive line is going to be a strength of this football team. You did lose a couple of guys through graduation, but at the same time, they've been loading up on talent on that offensive line for a couple of years. And Vance Weiss, the offensive line coach, really loves versatility. You saw Christian Darrisaw playing left tackle last year as a freshman. And that's something that a lot of guys can do in this conference. He's back. He'll anchor one side. Lucina Smith will be on the other. You'll have competition. You're hoping that Brock Hoffman would have been eligible on a waiver, but I'll digress on the NCAA's decision on that, at least for now, from Coastal Carolina, and hope that maybe that'll change. If it does, he's probably your right guard. You like what you have in the middle in Zachariah Hoyt, who got plenty of time last year. And then you've kind of got competition at that, the other guard spot on the left side. But again, that's a line that you feel like you brought in one of your best recruiting classes over the last year or so, and you feel like you have 10, 12 deep.
You know, it'd be easy for me to say that Ryan Willis, who, by the way, is on the Maxwell Award watch list, lock at quarterback, but there's 2 4-star recruits in Hooker and Patterson, plus transfer Burmeister. By the way, is he eligible this season? That's a question. That presents some options should something go astray. Talk to us about the QB slot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if the season started today, it would most definitely be Ryan Willis. Coach Fuente has never been a guy that has easily anointed a guy at this time of the year, even if that was Josh Jackson coming off his outstanding season as a freshman leading in to last year. But you know, I think Ryan's a tremendous arm talent when you combine him with what you have on the perimeter, and I'm sure we'll get to that in just a second. You know, I think he's a guy that can put up big numbers. Quincy Patterson, I think there'll be packages for this year. You know, he's the outstanding guy that really raised eyebrows, and I think a lot of people thought it was the future at quarterback, and still is, for the Hokies coming out of Chicago. Just maybe not quite there in terms of the ability to lead this offense, but certainly has the ability at this point to lead specific packages. And now that you don't have the redshirt issue with him this year, you can probably use that with a little more frequency. Hendon Hooker was making big strides last year going into the bowl. Justin Fuente was really candid about that, and then unfortunately got injured a couple of days before the bowl and wasn't able to showcase that. So he's going to be in the mix. And Braxton Burmeister, you're right. That is a question. Whether or not he'll be eligible, because if he is, he's certainly a guy that has a talent to step in or make things interesting in camp. So it's not wide open. It's Willis's job at the moment, but certainly there's a lot of talent in that room at the moment too.
Looking at the running back roster, Stephen Peoples gone. I've got a lot of questions here, and who's filling the spot?
Yeah, it's going to be Deshaun McLeese and Jalen Holston. And Holston's a guy that was slowed at the end of his freshman year by a knee injury. It was a little bit slow at the beginning of last season, and you really started to keep it round into form towards the end of the year when Peoples broke down a little bit. Got a lot of carries at the tail end of the year. So it's those two primarily at top. I think Terry Sweetley's probably your third down back, your pass-catching guy. We've seen him be pretty explosive behind the scenes. You bring in some other options as freshmen that you wouldn't ideally have to play right off the bat. And, of course, you're continuing to look at some other decisions out there. Guys are slow. I won't go into too many specifics that have visited and looked and potentially may be here to to both to the roster in that area as well. But that is, again, like on the defensive side, defensive line is the biggest question. That's probably the biggest question that an otherwise very stacked offense has.
Receiving core opened plenty of doors for passing attack from the Hokies. Hazleton returns from injuries. Turner had an excellent end of the year run last season. There's a couple of four-star recruits in the blend, plus tight end Keene, who has excellent hands. Talk to us about the wide receivers.
Yeah, that's where you're loaded, because you saw what Damon Hazleton was able to do before. As you pointed out, he got dinged at the end of the season. He returned, but really was more of a decoy. And then you saw what Turner was capable of in his freshman season, stepping in and kind of taking over the role for Damon. So I think we're all excited to see what can happen when you put them on either side of the field and put Hezekiah Grimsley in the slot. Dalton Keene, you mentioned, is the Swiss Army knife, as they call him. He plays a lot of H-back. He'll spend a lot of time blocking and protecting, but he'll also spend a lot of time, as you saw in the Virginia game, being able to get downfield and make plays, catching the football and running with the football. James Mitchell is a guy that nobody knows of yet, and they will. He's my candidate for breakout player of the year at the other tight end spot. You're going to see a lot more two tight end sets, I think, from Virginia Tech this year, because he's that prototypical athletic tight end. He can block, but he's going to be more of a pass catcher in the mold of a Bucky Hodges. So you can start to just hear that. There's a ton of options. There's a lot of receiving options behind those three that I mentioned as well. You feel good about your receiving core 9-10 deep, which is a luxury that you haven't had. So, yeah, this is going to be a dangerous team in terms of when they put the football up, which, to give everyone a little bit of hint, will be very often.
The schedule. If the stars had ever lined up more favorably for the Hokies, this is certainly the year. Yet there are several games that are going to be big challenges. Season begins with Boston College. And the first biggie comes up on October 5th at Miami. The next on November 2nd at Notre Dame. Pitt visits Blacksburg. That's an interesting game. And then it's the Commonwealth Cup, November 29th at Virginia. Give us an idea of what your thoughts are on this schedule.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, again, in a perfect world, as we sit here and examine it, it couldn't break much better for the Hokies. You know, fans are a little bit upset because there's not kind of that marquee home game like you've had each of the last few years, at least since I've been here, where you had Notre Dame last year and Clemson the year before and Ohio State Buffalo Coach Beamers last year. But at the same time, when they're not marquee games, that generally means they're games that you should win, right? That's how it goes. So you look at that Boston College game, which will launch the ACC Network. It'll be one of the games that launches the ACC Network. That's a huge one. You know, again, that could really spell the trajectory for both of those programs, I think. And for the Hokies, it's a power run offense, which was kind of their kryptonite last year with a very young and physically immature defense. So you look at Boston College, they're kind of retooling both of their lines, and that's one that the Hokies feel like they need to get on the road to get rolling. After that, a couple weeks later, they're going to try to score 100 on Old Dominion, of course, after what happened down there and the embarrassment that they suffered. But the next three at home, you know, stack up very favorably. Miami, which, of course, everyone, when we get to Charlotte here in a little bit, we'll talk about as potentially a game that will be highly impactful in the Coastal, comes a little bit earlier in the schedule than it has over the last few years. So that's another one that can kind of tilt where you're heading. Pittsburgh, maybe a little bit down from last year, but they had their way with the Hokies on the road. So bringing them into Lane Stadium, that's going to be one that they've got circled as well. And, of course, Virginia on the road, trying to make it 16 straight over the Hoos in a vastly improved program, with a tip of the cap to what Bronco Mendenhall has done down there. So, you know, there's always going to be a team or two that you think is going to be down that will be better than you thought, and there'll be a team or two that you thought were going to be pretty good that won't be. So it won't play out exactly the way that we think, but at the same time, if the Hokies can stay healthy and play well, the schedule certainly is not a detriment this year.
With that, we're going to wrap up our time with John Lazor, the voice of Virginia Tech Hokies. We want to thank you, John, specifically because you've got a lot of speaking engagements going on and you're suffering from a summer cold. We appreciate the in-depth look at Virginia Tech football.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. And thank you for offering that caveat. Hopefully it hits now and it won't be a factor once the season starts.
Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation Podcast. Click on our subscription option to make it easy. Or join us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or TuneIn. We'd appreciate a rating and or review while you're there. We're streaming 365 24/7 at ACC Nation Radio. Visit our site, accnation.net, and connect. Be sure to look for us coming soon to your favorite streaming sites. Follow us on social media at ACC Nation. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And pump up our numbers for the guys. Make sure that you follow Will Ogenin at Will's World MN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.